But this, Michael this morning put out the challenge to us about where there is no vision, the people perish. And I just want to share with you briefly this afternoon the vision that we were given in Cambridge and that we had to follow through all the ups and downs, the heartaches, the joys, and perhaps challenge you where your vision is going to be. It was in 1980, we had just gone to Cambridge, when we were stood outside, Michael was stood outside our church on one of the main streets in Cambridge. Cambridge is a university town with thousands upon thousands of bicycles, as some of you have already heard. The bicycles were hurtling past, the traffic was jostling in between the bicycles. Tourists, which were still around in the autumn, were going up and down the street, so it was sometimes difficult to hear an English voice. The language students, and we get thousands of those in the summer, were just about leaving. The busy work people were going up and down the street, and of course, the normal shoppers. The whole scene was a normal city centre hustle and bustle. And he was stood outside with all these people walking past our church doors. And what were the church doors like? They were shut. On Sunday, we opened the church doors, but where were the people? Oh, of course, the people that bothered to come to church were coming through them, but the city, on the whole, was dead. And it was that day in 1980 that he received a direct vision that we had got to do something about it. The Lord had placed us in the city centre, and we had to have a vision of seven-day Christianity there in the centre of Cambridge, not just open on Sundays, but open all week, so that people could flow in and out, that there'd be ministries going on, that all sorts of people who would never normally step across the threshold of a church door would come on in. Now, St Andrew Street Baptist Church in Cambridge had lived on its history for quite a while. It's a very historical church. It was founded in 1721 in a yard called the Stone Yard. Many famous ministers have ministered there. Robert Robinson, the hymn writer. C.H. Spurgeon, some of you I'm sure have heard of him, was a Sunday school teacher there. And just to bring a little bit of Australia in, Alice, of Alice Springs fame, was actually married in the church. Not the present building, because that was put up in 1903, but the old building. So St Andrew Street was resting on its laurels, you know. We've got a historical church, we've had a great past. But to be absolutely honest, in 1980, it was really in the doldrums. Now, you ladies will appreciate the fact that if we were going to do anything, anything at all, we'd need a decent kitchen. And if any of you saw our church kitchen back in 1980, you'd have had a fit. It was terrible. In fact, I don't know how anybody ever ate things that came out of the church kitchen, because it was so appalling. But there we are. We had faith and we all survived. But we desperately needed a new church kitchen. And so began this vision, really, around the kitchen. We've got to raise money, we said, to put in a decent kitchen, because if we're going to do anything in the city centre, we've got to have adequate premises. Now, we had the halls, but we didn't have decent facilities. But more than anything, we wanted to prove that the church was alive and well in the city centre, and we didn't want to be the thing that everybody walked past or the place that just didn't matter in people's lives. We wanted to be a significant part of people's lives. Now, it came as a bit of a shock to us in the manse that a lot of the people who say we should be evangelising, or we should be doing more, we should be reaching out to people, we should, alongside our preaching, be giving the social gospel, etc. A lot of those people, when it actually came to the challenge, freaked out. They didn't want to know. They were frightened. And I tell you now, we actually lost people, some of the most articulate people who, prior to all this, had been saying for years they do it. But when someone came along who gave them a vision, they couldn't face up to it. And that was one of the shocks of the vision that we had. On July the 15th of that year, 1980, the church meeting met and we prayed and we discussed where we should go. On the front of the church, adjacent to the church, we owned a very run-down shop. It was a Singer sewing machine shop. And it was just at that time that the owner discovered he couldn't afford to keep the lease. And we wondered if this was God's significant timing for us. Should this be the time when we took back our own little shop, which desperately needed a coat of paint, let alone anything else, and use it for some sort of Christian work? Some of us wanted to do coffee bar evangelism. Others had other ideas. But anyway, the idea was there. Was this God's timing for us? This shop, these premises were coming onto the market back into our own hands. And so that began a whole series of events, and I could keep you here all day. I won't. I'm only going to pick out a couple of significant days and skip through it as fast. You just have to take it as read that many, many wonderful things did happen to prove to us that the Lord was well and truly in the vision and setting his seal upon it. We went from strength to strength, but we knew that we'd got no money. By April the 22nd, 1984, everyone in the church had received a leaflet called "What is God's Future for Us?" We knew that a proposed scheme at that stage would cost us £300,000, now roughly double that, $600,000. But we knew we got no money. We got virtually no money. The church meeting met again and prayed, and we decided, or the church meeting decided and the deacons, that Michael would sit in his vestry on the Monday night, the Tuesday night, and the Wednesday night, and the Saturday morning of Easter week. And on Easter Sunday morning, we would take the final collection and we would see how the Lord was leading us. He sat in his vestry for 2 hours each evening and on the Saturday morning to receive confidential gifts, promises, interest-free loans. Now, some of our sceptics said, "Oh, heaven's sake, you'll be lucky if you get £10,000. This church is not renowned for its generosity." We tried to replace all the pew cushions at a cost of £7,000 and we were struggling to repay that debt. "You're absolutely mad." That's what they thought, and some of them actually said it. We prayed and we prayed. Every night we prayed. We prayed before the sitting, we prayed during the sitting, and we prayed after the sitting. And on Easter Sunday morning, the church was packed to overflowing as people came and they brought their gifts. Michael preached while some of the people went out, and it was counted there and then during the service, something we wouldn't normally do. Michael quoted from Ray Lindquist, "Where Christ goes, drama goes. For it is impossible to look in the Gospels and fail to find something powerful happening." At the end of the service, the person who counted the money mounted the steps to the pulpit, not giving a thing away, not a flicker of emotion on his face. It was terrible. Can you imagine what, you know, we were all sitting there sort of dying to know. And Michael didn't know either. And it was absolutely thrilling when he was able to announce that we had given freely, no fundraising, just freely given, the equivalent of, now my math isn't very good, but I think it is $336,000. Oh, we stood and sang the doxology, wouldn't you? It was wonderful. And we just felt God is in this. We couldn't believe it. This was about 150 people, and not even extremely wealthy people. We have students, we have senior citizens, we have one or two people that have got a good income, but on the whole, it was sacrificial giving. Now, the sceptics said, "Oh, well, you haven't got it all, have you? The Lord hasn't given it to you all. What about, you know?" But as you know and I know, that we don't get it all just like that. We have to work for things. But we felt that this was a tremendous blessing and a tremendous seal of approval on what we felt our vision to be and what we were called to do. That night, we concluded with a baptismal service. And I can honestly say that St Andrew Street Baptist Church in Cambridge has never ever been the same since. The third date It's Tuesday, April the 19th, 1988. This was a bit of a terrible time. Michael had been struck down the previous Christmas with a mystery illness which almost, not quite, but almost totally disabled him. It was a dreadful, dreadful dark tunnel that we were going through. He was so ill, he didn't know what was going on. He was drugged to stop the dreadful muscle spasms. The boys and I were trying to cope with him, cutting up his food, trying to help dress him. It was terrible. In the midst of all this going on, the church was growing, the project was going on, and we just did not know what the Lord was saying to us in this terrible time. In the middle of all this, one of the deacons turned up who had taken over responsibility for the work of the Christian Centre that was now well and truly on the road. He said, "I don't want to depress you, but I have to tell you that the restaurant that we felt called to build, we don't think we can do that. It's too ambitious. The £45,000, $90,000 worth of dry rot has just been discovered in the church, on top of all the other sums that we were trying to raise." He said, "I'm sorry, but I know that the ultimate aim is to appoint a director of all this work. We need someone to spearhead it, but we just haven't got the money and there's no way we're going to get it." And he said, "Although we were going to open a counselling centre, nothing's clicked on that front, I'm afraid." He said, "Now, look, don't be depressed, but this is how it is." Oh, it was terrible. Talk about pray in the darkness and just have faith, because we did feel that things were going to be right in the end. It was a time of great darkness, great desolation. I recall once the building had started, the foreman of the building site allowed me to climb up, you know, with the safety helmet on, onto the second floor in all the rubble and all the, you know, the stairs weren't properly formed yet and everything, but he took me up there to look across at the building. And I remember thinking, "Lord, what on earth did you give us this vision for? It's nearly killing us. Michael's been ill, it's just terrible. What on earth is going on? I can't understand this." I really felt desperate. But I knew that maybe we just got to hang on it. Well, I knew definitely we just got to hang on in there, because this was in fact God's vision for us and we had got to see it through, and nobody has ever got anything without hard work, without lots and lots of prayer, and without a bit of heartache along with the joy. And then I come to my last date. June the 10th, well, dates, and 11th, 1989, last year, just over a year ago. And that was a time of indescribable joy when God's answer to our prayers, his seal of approval on the vision, and the culmination of our hopes to be salt and light in the city centre of Cambridge came to fruition. In the year before, we had known nothing of the possibility of people giving their lives to work in the Stone Yard Centre. So called, of course, because that was where the church originally began. Jenny Robinson Joyce, a vicar's wife, an Anglican vicar's wife, left by her husband with two young children in traumatic circumstances, felt called after this awful event to go into marriage guidance counselling and has set up the Cog Wheel Trust, giving Christian marriage guidance, relationship counselling, help to one parent families and so on. And Jenny was desperately praying for a centre to work in and to extend the work of the trust. We came together, and many of our people now have been trained to give counselling, to work in the Cogwheel Trust, which is on the second floor of our centre. And it's a joy to see so many people who come in who are in desperate need. We can just send them up the stairs for proper counselling. Roy Toseland, a Christian ex-football player, man in his 40s, who felt called to come and work in our job centre, a Baptist, where if you're unemployed for 6 months or more, you can come to the job club. You're given free access to telephones, to notepaper, to stamps, all the things you cannot probably afford if you're unemployed, we provide. And we have had a marvellous success rate of finding some of the hardest cases employment after long-term unemployment. That's on the first floor. Ron Messenger, we call him Mr. Counselor back home in our denomination because he is renowned throughout our country. He specialises in the really tough cases of counselling, the ones that most of us wouldn't even begin to understand or be able to help with. He's also excellent in helping in clergy marriages which are under stress and strain. And Ron has just retired but felt called to give 3 days a week to counselling in our centre, and he's the expert in our country. College House Trust, a trust which began in our country, things like Greenbelt. I don't know if it's come over here, Greenbelt. Perhaps some of the younger ones will know. A sort of Christian pop and arts festival. Our son's just come back a few weeks ago. Had a wonderful time. They founded that. They run seminars on all sorts of subjects which make life relevant to Christianity and Christianity relevant to our living. They too have been praying for somewhere to come, a base to hold their seminars. They've moved into the church library and they're working there. And last but not least, we had no money for a director. Somebody to sort of get all this together, to keep an overall picture, to keep everything going. And somebody anonymously said, I would like to donate 4 years' salary covenanted so that we can appoint a director. And we now have Graham Thompson and his marvellous wife, who's Michael's secretary, a couple of days a week. And he has brought it all together. So we really felt the seal of God's approval on all our plans. The restaurant, well, we serve something like 2,500 hot meals a week. People come in from all over the city. We're quite famous now because obviously we're totally non-smoking, which appeals to a lot of people. The main thing is that all on the tables are Christian literature. People read anything you put in front of them, so we make sure what they read is Christian, is challenging. We have a full-time staff of 7 working in the restaurant, and it's open Monday to Saturday, 6 days a week, and Sundays it's closed, of course, but then we serve hundreds and hundreds of free cups of coffee to our own congregation on Sundays in the restaurant. But you may be asking, what happened to all the church? Well, it's really put us on our toes. Because we talked about evangelism, we talked about getting alongside people, we talked about befriending, and now we've got the vehicle to do it. The venue is the restaurant. We ask our senior citizens, can't you come down, have a coffee, have a lunch, look around, see who's sitting on their own, who's lonely, go and sit beside them, befriend them. And many wonderful stories are coming through. I've only time to share just a couple with you, but I think of Rhiannon, a nurse just come to our big teaching hospital. Rhiannon came in, I was in that day, I love to go down and clear tables and talk to people, and she was sitting there all by herself, and suddenly she just burst into tears. Immediately somebody was with her and came and got me, and Rhiannon said, I've just moved to Cambridge, I'm a nurse, just starting at Addenbrooke's Hospital. I'm so lonely. Well, it was wonderful because that day one of our nurses was doing voluntary work in the kitchen, so we dragged Audrey out. Audrey sat down, they chatted about the hospital. She told her about X, Y, and Z was already there, and oh, it was great. Rhiannon's been back every week. Rhiannon now plays in our music group. And on July the 8th this year, Michael had the joy of marrying her and Ross, whom she met at the church. And their wedding was a lovely day, all because of the Stoneyard Centre and coming into the restaurant. I think of Frank, a dear elderly man, blind, partially sighted, who sings in the blind choir of Cambridge, who came in very lonely, moved to Cambridge, and was immediately befriended by some of our older folk, and now sings in the church, I couldn't call it a choir, not exactly, but more of a singing group. With the young one, he's marvellous. And I think of Jim Moroney, who came over from the States. We get lots and lots of people from the States. And he came in really lonely to the restaurant. And we talked with him. He came back the next day to services. He's been every week since. His wife and child have now moved over to England for his 4-year term of service. And they've all become church members. And these are just one or two of the stories And I'd just like to read to you something that literally arrived almost as we were leaving home last week. We had a very nice visitor. We get lots and lots of visitors. A girl from Liverpool, and this is what she writes. I really believe St. Andrew's Street is a fantastic witness in Cambridge, not only to the people who live locally, but to many visitors as well. The Stoneyard Centre has left a great impression on my parents. My mum and dad aren't Christians, but called in last year for a coffee. They still talk about how welcome they felt and how people took the time to sit and have a talk to them. So St. A's is famous in Liverpool. I really thank God for that, as it is so hard trying to live up to the standards of what my mum and dad believe a Christian is. We do get a lot of letters, but I share that one with you because it just came last week. Now, I don't think it's insignificant that this is the decade about to begin of evangelism. A decade of evangelism. But equally important, I believe, alongside that, did you know it's also the decade of women? And I would like to challenge you before I sit down. Our vision obviously won't be your vision. It won't be the vision in your church or in your life. Maybe some of you will be called in a city centre church, I don't know, to open a restaurant, open council, whatever it happens to be. But the great thing is, in this decade leading up to the year 2000, we have got to get up and speak up and have visions. And we have got to act on it. I feel so strongly myself about the young people today. I fear in England for our youth. I fear for my own sons, for my grandchildren, should I have any. We are becoming such an atheistic, violent, aggressive, impatient society. I grieve for our nation. And I personally have a burden that our restaurant and back home would be open every night to young people. Do you know that 93% of English people do it? 50% of 11-year-olds have done it. And what is it? It's drink. Alcohol. They have taken alcohol. There are more teenagers killed with alcohol than any other drug, amazingly. And I know for a fact that in our city, underage drinking is a terrible problem, and I long to see the churches offering an alternative to young people to going into the pubs and all the places where alcohol is so freely available. That's my particular burden at the moment. Maybe your burden is something else. I worry about pornography. I feel really sick when I see those dreadful magazines for sale. We were in Budapest last year at the European Baptist Federation Congress. As you know, Budapest now, Hungary, much, much more open to the West. And one of the sad things is that pornography is one of the first things that's hit them. A little boy about 7 or 8 years old in the station sitting on the floor selling pornographic magazines. I was shocked and I felt, oh God help us that this is what we're giving them in those communist countries that they had managed to keep out. I feel very strongly myself about our television viewing standards. I see programmes, early evening programmes, which young kids watch, and I feel ill when I think that little kids, little children could be seeing this and just emulating what they see, the violence, the sex. Maybe that's your burden. Maybe you've got to stand up and stand up against it and let them know that we don't want it. And I feel very, very upset when I see the refugee and the homeless problem. We've got a homelessness problem in Cambridge, and ultimately our dream is to put any profits from our restaurant into missions and homelessness. And we're already supporting a homeless project in the city. Oh, I could go on and you could go on. You could share with me, I'm sure, many of your concerns. But what I'm challenging you to do in this decade of women is to be such a voice around the world. Just think of the power that we could have if we stood united with the truth of the gospel. But it takes courage. You've got to be, well, you've got to dare to be different. You've got to be able to be ridiculed by the world or say, well, for heaven's sake, if we want to turn our televisions on and see that, it's up to us. But we know what road that's led us down as a society. Oh, I beseech you, ladies, whatever the Lord has for you, whatever is inside your heart, whatever is burning away, please act on it in this decade of evangelism, this decade of women. Don't let them say, decade of women, what was that? Let them hear us. We're the ones, well, I shouldn't say this with my husband here, but we're the ones that ultimately get things done. I'm convinced of that. How many times in the church is it the ladies who do a lot of the hard work? And how many of our saints who pray day by day by day are our ladies? Maybe your ministry and your vision will be to pray for a nation that's gone astray, to pray for a world that is sick. But I just pray that you will have a vision and be able to act on it. A verse that we were given time and time again in our vision was from Isaiah 54, verse 2. Enlarge the place of your tent. Stretch your tent curtains wide. Do not hold back. Lengthen your cords. Strengthen your stakes, for you will spread out to the right and left. Will you be courageous? Will you spread your tents? Will you do something? Let's forget about sitting and talking. The time for action is now. Especially if we value those wonderful children and those lovely grandchildren that so many of us have. Thank you for listening, and it's been a pleasure to be with you, and God bless you all.